Blog Talk Radio.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. الرحمن الرحيم. مالك يوم الدين. إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين. اهدنا الصراط المستقيم. صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Latifa A. Hameen, the CEO for American Muslim 360, the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice is protected.
The views expressed by the host guests are their own and not necessarily the position of AM 360 or the parent corporation, the Community-Wide Shura Conference, CWSC Incorporated. AM 360 content is intended as a community service and is not designed to provide specific personal, medical, financial, or legal counsel or other professional advice, and no liability shall extend to the host or hostesses of AM 360 or CWSC. We encourage you to seek an advisor for your specific circumstance. Now Joshua fought the battle of Jericho,
and the walls came tumbling down. Community-Wide Shura Conference and American Muslim 360 invite you to promote your organization or event on the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice protected. Affordable rates allow you to promote your event, product, or service and strengthen our national intelligentsia network. Contact corporate underwriting today at info@cwsc.us. That's info@cwsc.us. Or call 910-317-0297. Again, 910-317-0297. Together we can remake the world.
Assalamu alaikum. God, Monday morning.
Assalamu alaikum.
How are you?
Alhamdulillah,
yes. Grateful for another day.
We made it through. Not everybody can say it, but we made it through. Take a deep breath. In Spanish we say respira. Take it in, let it out.
Oh, yes.
Let's see. There's so much going on. I just got a message in here as I was listening to the PSA. Message came through that they just declared a state of emergency here on I-10. In Southern Cal, there's an I-10 fire. 3,000 commuters use the I-10 every day. It's this very busy and impacted mobility area in the LA area. There's a fire encroaching on the freeway. So I wanted to just say that.
Yes. Yeah, I called my granddaughter. She's out there going to college, not far from the L.A. Airport, and I checked on her when I first saw the report this morning because some of the support system on that bridge was actually cracking a little bit, so they had to close that whole thing down. So I was just reminding her, don't drive anywhere. Don't drive anywhere. Now, she listened to Grandpa, that's a whole different matter. But she's been advised. So inshallah, they'll
she's
be okay.
Been warned, huh?
Yeah, she has been warned.
Check on
did
your
they say what
you
caused the fire? Have you heard, Sharon, what caused the fire? Have they gotten to that point with the investigation yet? Because that was a massive, massive fire to cause that kind of damage.
They haven't, but, you know, the last 2 days it's been really windy. My sister was up here from Southern Cal, and she drove back early so she could beat that on the grapevine. So what she said was, she was driving up, and I met her in Palo Alto, was that it was, you know, it's really windy and dry.
Right.
And so when, you know, two things that don't match in California is a lot of wind and dry. And a little bit of heat, because it's not like hot out here, but even when it's 69, 70 degrees and it's been heated and dry for so long and not enough water, and when that wind starts whipping up, it's got perfect conditions. For what we have is not necessarily wildfires in that part of the state, but you have dry fires. So, yeah, they can go.
So they call them the Santa Ana winds or something?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. The Santa Ana winds will whip you up, take you off your feet. Take you off your feet.
Everybody will be, be careful down there in Southern Cali.
Yes, everybody. Please, please, please. We got enough going on. We don't, you know, let's try and avoid what we can. We got a couple other things. That are going on between, you know, since last week when we spoke, we've got our sister, Congresswoman Tillett, was censured, speaking truth. This is what I'm going to say. This is the way I interpret it. Other people can say whichever way they want to, but that's my interpretation. We have... got just 4 days for the government to come up with a good budget. They four shot it down, and some of us have to. Some have to keep on ramen noodles, and some have to figure out how to like them. But these not they just there's some tone deafness and. Working in the House of Congress right now. We have, we just have some high levels of what's the word I want to look for? Misunderstanding or non-understanding is the word I want, about what government is and what government is not. So today's show is going to, we're going to hone in on that. Ever since, you know, and since last week, we had our former president weigh in on what's happening overseas. So I wanted to take a few minutes before we talk about this subject, because I know it's going to come up. I do want to get your feedback on President Obama's. Did you see him on the podcast? His remarks in the podcast.
Yes, I did.
This week. Okay, good.
I want
to take a few. You didn't see it?
No, I didn't see. I wasn't in the mood to see it. I didn't want to be disappointed.
You won't be disappointed. Do you think so, brother? I think
she wouldn't be disappointed. It's coming.
I don't think
time.
So. We'll, Yeah, I think we'll give you a quick summary. He's being slammed by some people, sorry, but others are.
Yeah,
it was pretty much right on time.
Yeah.
But he was pretty. And so if you think if you know he's being slammed, then you'll be okay with it. it was pretty much, and it came very timely. So we'll do it about the end of the moment. But first, I want to check in with you too. I want to check in with you and find out. Two questions. Brother, what's making you stand tall in your boots? And not the Prince boots, the regular boots. The artist formerly known as Prince boots. And just the regular boots. Your Timberlands, let's say it that way.
Yeah.
What made you stand
okay.
tall in your Timbs? And then... if a sister was making you click your heels, you know, stand in them heels, making you click when you walk.
Heels, huh?
That's when you know you're confident, when your heels made that pretty sound on the ground.
Click, click.
And then,
okay.
click, click. And then, was making you drop to your knees. You just got to hit Saj a couple times.
Mm-hmm. At least
that kind of day. I mean, you just in one motion you hit Sasha. You know, sometimes you gotta hit it. You gotta roll down into it. You gotta roll into it. But sometimes you just drop in one motion into it. It's just that bad of a day. You just gotta let me just lay back. So. What's making you like really hit Sajda? What's making you stand tall in your Timbs?
Mm-hmm.
Or your clicky heels? There you go.
I should let my sister go first so I can give this a little thought. Timberlakes were a little behind me. That's my generation behind me, but I do have some, what are those boots called?
Timberlands.
That's a generation behind me.
I got mine on now. I got my Timberland on now.
That's what I said. That's a generation behind me. See, forget your brother's a young 71. So I had
the
old folk compass. I had the old folk compass. You know, that's my version of a boot, but we'll go through that in just a second. But since I'm going to go right ahead with your response, and I'll follow up on yours.
Oh, my
Okay, sis. What's making you heal?
Okay, what has me shaking my head? Did you say do that first? Well, of course it was the
No. What's making you drop in Sajda or what's making your heels click?
Okay, drop in Sajda. Would be... the 22 Democrats that joined the Republican suspension, Rashida Tlaib, and here they have an indicted Republican in Santos, and nobody's censuring him or trying to expel him. They tried, but they didn't have enough votes. And I coupled that. Well, I guess I would say just how so many politicians, because their pockets are filled by APAC, the Jewish lobby, and they can't speak the truth because they wouldn't get those dollars in their pockets. And couple that with Benjamin Netanyahu. He and Trump, I think, are cut from the same cloth because these guys, there used to be an expression we would use, you lie faster than a horse trots.
Ooh, Lord, have
these
mercy.
These guys, I mean, they can lie quickly and with a straight face and will give you, you know, 10 or 15 minutes of justification for what they're doing that they know is wrong. And Netanyahu this weekend on the TV talk shows, you know, trying to push back on the genocide that the IDF forces are conducting in in Gaza as if they don't, you know, they put it back on Hamas, you know, where they situate the headquarters and the munitions under hospitals and residences. And because it's situated there, it doesn't mean you have to bomb the hospital. And here they have bombed the biggest hospital in Gaza. And on TV shows, they show these little premature babies that there's no more oil, no more fuel, so they can't continue in the incubators because there's no electricity in the hospital. And I just don't see how anyone with any degree of compassion, so these are sociopaths that are leading these governments when they can justify that kind of killing of innocent life. So that has me in such a, because I pray a lot that these type of oppressors are taken off of the face of the earth, and that I never have that coldness of my heart, that I can't be moved by the taking of innocent life. But on the other hand, I'm clicking my heels because today is World Kindness Day. So we're going to be kind to one another, even though there's some little gremlins among us who are not kind, because we're going to be kind today. It's World Kindness Day. And the second part of the heel clicking is the courage of Rashida Tlaib to just keep on going, and the caucus members that are supporting her in her statements. And then also on MSNBC, Nicole Wallace, I don't know if she did it twice or she and another anchor had three students on who were talking about the fear that Jewish students have on the college campuses because of the pro-Palestinian students and professors. And one of the young ladies was from Brown. She wasn't as animated as the young lady from Cornell was. They had had more overt actions on the Cornell campus, and they even had a suspect in custody, they say. Now, they don't tell you his name, so that makes me suspect about who the suspect is. We know that he's probably not a brown or black person. So we have to wait to see what the final word is on that. But the Jewish students at Brown University did a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful open letter explaining why they support the Palestinian cause and calling for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza and the giving of humanitarian aid. And I thought that was very brave of those students. They had this open letter and they signed their names and they gave a contact email where they can be contacted. So they're being very courageous. They're not afraid of being doxxed by their opponents. So I salute them and very, very proud of what they're doing. And again, today is World Kindness Day. That's it. Seems quick.
Well, that's quite a bit.
Love it.
Love it.
Yeah, you got to follow it. So.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I was going through my, memories on my people that I listened to yesterday, in fact, and ran across Angela Davis's when she got rejected by the Birmingham Civil Rights Museum for receiving the award from, my brother who's been fighting on it for years. His name is a second, but he was there even before Dr. King doing work in the community. So they had recognized her to receive this award. And then, of course, a small Jewish group somehow convinced the Board of Trustees at the Civil Rights Museum in Birmingham, I've been there several times, not to give her. In fact, they said rescind the award to her because of her statements about Palestine, et cetera. And so her response is, since I've been involved in a professional life, I've been a part of the effort to impose the same kind of apartheid on Israel as I did on South Africa. And that's been, I've written books about it, et cetera. And I have to stand on freedom, no matter who it impacts, et cetera. And her appeal was that people have to have an honest discussion about what's really going on instead of just having a one-sided discussion, even with the word Zionism and, you know, anti-Semitism. She really broke it down in terms of a theological, you know, distinction between the two, and how she had some friends who were Jewish and that they also opposed this concept of Israel being perceived as someone who was God's chosen people, which leads me to a second little small documentary I was watching. This Jewish prior representative, I forget his function in the Knesset, but he had the courage to say, listen, there are three things that gives Israel this sense of arrogance. First, the idea in their mind that indeed we are the chosen people of God, so we feel safe doing whatever we do. Second, that we are the victims, and we've been victims since the Holocaust. And so because of our victim mindset, that also allows us to have a certain sense of safety. Third, we have actually seen the Palestinians all around us as being dehuman, less than human, so we can do anything to them and not feel ashamed about it because we don't recognize them as being human. Now, that really caused me to pause for a minute. I mean, this is 2023. Now, this guy was a representative in the Knesset, I think maybe 10 years ago, and he was willing to make that kind of statement and get support in Israel for his position. I said, now, what is this Bibi not listening to? You know, who? And I know about his history, you know, but there are elements even within Israel that don't support that insanity. How do you dehumanize everybody around you geographically as being dehuman? I mean, just subhuman almost. In fact, he used one example. He was on an ambulance going from one location to another. He was a journalist. I take that back. He was a journalist. And so he stopped. He was stopped, of course, on this ambulance and checked by the Israelis for, you know, all kind of documentation, et cetera. And he asked the person that stopped him, how would you feel if this is your father in the ambulance? And the guy got offended because he said, how dare you even suggest that my father would be Palestinian? Not responding to the health condition, but to the concept that you're going to equate him with Palestinian. So that mindset is almost anti-anything scripturally, because that's the longest period of colonization we have in the modern history. And they actually, in many of their minds, see themselves as human and the Palestinians as subhuman. And it goes way beyond that, but that concept still thrives in a lot of their mental capacity. So that got up under my that made me stand up in my boots just a little bit. And I'm still working with this group. I may have mentioned it before. It's called the Spalding International Brain Trust, and we send resolutions to the UN. UNESCO finally responded with some humanitarian things they're going to try to do to put more pressure on the Western countries, and France responded first, demanding some kind of humanitarian relief to the Gaza, et cetera. But that's something I'm doing, you know, with the Spalding group. Inshallah, we'll have some other impact on that method through the UN. But what really gave me a little encouragement, I took three of my grandkids, you know, 11, 7, and 5. I lose count after a while. Anyway, I took them to see a musical over the weekend, and the play they saw was The Wizard of Oz, but it was a production done by an African-American group. And I got back home, and my little 11-year-old, who told her mother the other day, she's 11 years old, and she's a grown woman. I said, hey, just slow down just a little bit, baby. You got a little time to step into that sphere of your life. But she asked me, because what I do at my house, everybody has to read to me so many, you know, I guess to get off those technology and come in the living room, which is our library, and do some reading. So Asia started reading her little book. She's an excellent reader. And she said, Grandpa, Uncle Rodney had me to say a prayer before I ate my food, because we always say a little prayer. You know, I just say Bismillah, or in the name of Allah, most gracious, most merciful, go ahead and eat. And he put Jesus in there, and in his prayer that he was trying to teach me. So I didn't respond, but anything he said, and she said, Grandpa, what's the difference between Muslims and Christians? I said, well, baby, if you really, really want to look at it, the only difference is what names they use to identify God. And I got a Bible up there. You read that Bible, you see Jesus, and they refer to Jesus as God. In the Holy Quran, we refer to God as Allah. That's a big difference. Otherwise, our moral disposition is pretty much the same in most cases. She said, well, who's the Christian and the Muslim? I said, well, you're looking at one right now. You're looking at Grandpa, aren't you? She said, oh. Then I gave her some other little things she could use to, you know, satisfy her in curiosity. But that really encouraged me because my little seven-year-old, she picked up a little book that I had in the house, a little small red book. The name of it was The Flag of Islam. I said, Lord, have mercy. And she started reading it to me out loud. And, if you know, you've been on the communion. That's the book we used to read many, many moons ago with Justifying the History and the Flag, you know. And in her reading, she said, oh, well, who was Master Farad Muhammad, Grandpa? I said, well, that's a person that we thought had more power than he actually had. But let me show you the new flag we have now. Give me that Muslim journal over there. I said, this is our new flag. And you know what it represents, baby? It's this Holy Quran right here, open up. So this is the new flag we have. But just for them to have those kind of questions, sort of, it really enlightened my heart a little bit. I felt really good because they will ask me questions, and I'm responsible to answer them whenever they ask a question. So I feel good about that. And I got a response from New Jersey, too. They marched around Senator, what's that brother's name from New Jersey, Senator Cory Booker. Cory Booker. Yeah, Cory. Yeah, they were marching around his house and charging him for even being over in Israel. So I got a call from Brother Jimmy, and he asked me for a statement if he could share, you know, with that, about the whole situation. So I sent him what I wrote in the paper and some other things I had written in terms of ACGG's position on that. He just said Cory needed a little bit of support because they're giving him a lot of heat right now. So inshallah, you know, the brother will realize that he's not on an island by himself. He's got to do the right thing. You can't stand on justice and not stand for the Palestinians. And I'll end with that. I didn't mean to go over 30 seconds. I know I put about 4 to 5 seconds in, so sure that you time me.
Marching time.
Please, I didn't went. I didn't went around the corner and got the tea, came back, ate a muffin.
Oh my God!
Brushed my teeth. I done brushed my teeth. Shined up my Tim's and everything.
All right, sis.
Mark down, went over there, check out APEC, everything. I don't know what.
Alhamdulillah.
Yeah, those babies will ask us the right questions, huh?
Yes, they will.
Let me see. So, yeah, those are good. Let me tell you. I'm going to keep it simple because I want to get to our guests and I want to talk to because I'm asking some questions like this. I'm going to keep mine real high level. I am walking so tall in these boots and stepping in heels despite the fact that, you know, I got to hold on to some things in order to walk. I am stepping high, like my grandmother was saying, high cotton because
high cotton.
I'm watching.
Yes, I know I can.
I'm watching people turn on each other. These GOP turning on each other. I'm watching these congressional people, Democrats and Republicans, turning on each other, calling each other out. They say here, and I sent Sister Rashida a message. You know, listen, don't you worry about the thing, because the thing that I know, is karma never forgets your address. No matter how many times you move, you never forget your address. You can't hide, and even if you go in your mama's basement, you'll be putting your name on the orange carton. I bought that. Karma know your address, and look at what's happening to them right now. They're in fighting and everything. And I know this for a fact. I am enjoying watching them turn on each other because they're preaching all these, you know, backing one side or the other, and they can't, they ask for some money. Oh, no, I back you, but I'm not going to give you the money. You can't have no more money. No, that's where we drop you off. No. That's not going to happen. So I'm watching that. And then the thing that's got me, jumping, or just dropping to my knees besides watching the little people, that scene of the baby was hard. But just watching people fall all over themselves trying to justify why the cries of one baby differs from the cries of another.
Mm-hmm.
Sister, I know you're a mother, and brother, I know you're a father. And as parents, I just know that when I hear a baby, even today, when I hear a baby cry, or I say mommy, a small child say mom, I turn to look where it's coming from.
Mm-hmm.
My children haven't been small babies for a while, but I do turn to look where it's coming from. So I'm not sure. For me, you know, someone else's baby is just as precious as mine. Someone else's elderly grandmother is just as precious as mine. Someone who's infirmer in the hospital, they don't have a religion or a political party attached to them. You know, life is valuable and worthy, and to try and say otherwise is perplexing to me. So what drops me to my knees is in one false swoop is the fact that I is not other people. It's a fact for myself because I didn't have some evil thoughts lately. I didn't want some people taken out in my head. In my head. So God's still working with me because I'm going to tell you, some of the things, some of the thoughts I didn't thunk over the last week have not been good. And some of the screams I didn't scrubbed. And Troy, when I let you off of mute, do not be correcting me. I know scrumped is not a word, but I made it up. And I know that scrumped is not a word, but I made it up.
And we got to play it too.
You know me about making up words. I know.
You make up your words.
You know me. He said, that's not a word, Cheryl. I know. But I can't say the Spanish word, the English word of the equivalent that I'm thinking in Spanish. But some of the things that I've been, some of the things, I'm just telling you, pray for me, because I've been having some evil thoughts. That will happen to some of these people who have no compassion or mercy for other people's little babies and these being pulled out of these children being pulled out of rubble, and your heart is black, then mine is too. I just can't. I can't. And just trying to even have, so I refuse to have a conversation with him. And the last thing I'll say, and then we'll take a quick break and bring on our guests, is this. I was having this bout with myself about I feel like a coward sometimes because I really I refuse to say anything online. At first I was like I should say something, but then I know better not to say something because I don't want to go down that rabbit hole of having, because I watched last night, I was on two meetings last night, and I watched these people go back and forth in the chat. And I thought to myself, This is a mindless, silly conversation because you're not getting anywhere. None of them were getting anywhere. They were just going back and forth, and it was like keyboard warriors. And it solidified to me why I don't jump into those conversations on social media. Because at first I was like, oh, I need to issue something, and I keep battling myself about issuing a statement or saying something. But then as soon as I see how these people, they just attack each other. And there was a sister, one sister from Jewish for Peace, Jewish for Peace, JFP, and another Palestinian, and they were both trying to talk. And it was a very civil conversation with those two, but the people who were attacking each other in chat was not. And then so the one Palestinian woman was saying she does not feel safe. They didn't care. And it was only a few who were hijacking the chat, and everybody else was like, she says she don't feel safe, why are you in here you know, doing this? And they were like, well, what about the Jewish people, and what about, and even the Jewish person was like, what about us? And the thing she said that kind of really for me, that I really loved and kind of stuck with me, that she said something about something about not only that human life is precious, but the most Jewish thing that we can do is protect all life. Is agree that all life is precious, and that there is no nothing that we can say that Jewish life is more precious than other life. And this is something and I was listening to her, and I said, to say that is the most Jewish thing that you can do, and that is the most fundamental thing that she has learned outside of being deprogrammed from how she grew up. I said, that is somebody who, you know, you can sit down and have a conversation with.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, after all the interfaith work I do, it was good, because she was doing her best to not make the person who was feeling unsafe. She said, we spend a lot of time worried about how safe we feel, but not how safe the other person feels.
Mm-hmm.
In the room. And that is enlightening.
Mm-hmm.
With that, let's take a quick break, and then we'll come back, talk about President Obama. I'm going to bring our guests into the room, because I do want to talk about what President Obama said this weekend on the podcast. And then I want to talk about National Action Network. I'm bringing our guest in. Cool? We good?
Sounds good.
All right, bueno. One more. Don't touch that dial, everybody. Be right back.
Assalamu alaikum, and this is Latifa A. Hamid. Join me every second and fourth Sunday from 3 to 4 o'clock Eastern Standard Time right here on AM 360 for Relationship Talk, as we explore tips and discussion on how to have a healthy, happy relationship. See you there. Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum. That is the peace that only Almighty God can give be upon you, and that peace obligates us to keep the peace and promote the peace. I'm your host, Michael Hameen, of Not Just Talk on am360.org. Join us Thursday evening, 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central, and 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. We look forward to you being with us, joining our guests from inside the Islamic community as well as outside, those men and women who are community builders. And also, periodically on Thursday evenings, we have open mic where you become our guest. So join us for more of Not Just Talk, conversations related to community building. Again, Assalamu alaikum.
Join us for Muslim American Power 5 on Mondays, 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That's Muslim American Power 5, referred to as MAP5, featuring Sister Amatullah Sabri, Sister Cheryl Sadi, and Brother Fleming Alamein. That's Monday, 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time for MAP, Muslim American Power 5.
Welcome back to the show. All right. Let me ask you a question. How familiar are you two with National Action Network?
Well, I'm familiar with Reverend Al Sharpton, national president, I guess, of the National Action Network, and the things that he has done over the years with that organization.
Yeah.
Same here.
So let me fill in our audience, too. I actually wanted to say something before that. So, audience, in case you don't know, when we're talking about Sasha, I neglected to let you know what we're talking about. and in Christianity, it's that prostration. You know, when you kneel down, you get as low as possible to the ground. It's just a position, a prayer position. So, National Action Network, let me talk about it. So, Reverend Sharpton founded it in 1991 in the spirit of Dr. King. One of the chief reasons was to work on civil rights issues, you know. Working on things like setting a standard for justice. It's similar to the vein of, I guess, a NAACP, but more focused on really working for opportunities for everyone, where NAACP was focused on rights of black and brown people. NAN is really focused on everybody, regardless of race, religion, ethnicity, citizenship, criminal record, economic status, gender, expression, sexuality, all that good stuff, right? One of the things that draws a lot of people to National Network, well, especially somebody like me, is that word in the middle. Action. Right? So you see a lot more young adults working in to make things happen. One of the ways it works best is building this network of organizations around the country who are doing work as needed, engaging the communities, which is what we've been talking about a lot, right? Is how do you get the community activated, motivated, initiated, engaged, and keep them engaged in not just political work, but in work that's going to truly move the community forward. Troy Finley, buenos dias. Welcome to the show.
Cheryl Sutter, hello. Thank you. And just real quick, just a couple of things. One, you do make up words.
I told you don't be.
You do. That's a thing. You know it's a thing. Ever since the beginning of me and you.
Cheryl, I thought that was Flanglish. Isn't there such a thing as Flanglish?
I wish it was. Because sometimes okay. It's not even that.
All right.
It is. It's Flanglish. It's Cherylish. It's Cheryl language.
It's Cherylish.
It's what it is. Yeah. It's good language,
though. Thank you for having me on.
It's a good saying. You know you're going to steal that later. If I hear you say that later, I'm going to remind you where you heard it. Welcome to the show. I appreciate you joining us today. Tell us what, a couple of things, first of all. Tell us, I know that you joined as a leader for Northern California, but tell us a little bit more about the National Action Network. I just gave them a little piece. Tell us about that. But before we get way into it, I have a question for all of you guys about what's going on. So talk to us about it.
You said it right. I mean, you gave it what it is. We are similar to, you know, the NAACP simply because of the idea we're both social organizations. I think what took me away from the NAACP to NAN was that, you know, that action is big to me. and you know this from knowing me for a while, it's, I don't care about titles. I don't care about none of that stuff. If you're not putting in the work, nothing matters. You know, we can all have meetings every week and do that, but are we actually putting in the work? And then the idea of we are a Black-based organization, but not Black-focused. So that goes into the idea. We're here to improve our community. And I don't know who just lives in, you know, a community just with Black people or just with Hispanics or just with whites or just with Jews or Muslims or Christians. That those things don't exist. But if we want to improve things, we have to work together.
Absolutely.
Go ahead.
No, I like your territory, Troy.
Huh?
What's your territory?
My territory is San Francisco. I am the Bay Area president. So my territory is from San Francisco to Dixon.
Okay. All right. That makes sense. Mm. Okay, San Francisco, Dixon.
Yeah.
And what does that involve?
That's on both sides of the bay?
Yes. Yes. Okay. So both sides of the bay. And so, and doing that way, and that was when I was asked to take over or to expand this, I had to make sure, because one of the things that a lot of organizations don't do is be inclusive with each other. You know, you'll have organizations where they will stop in a city for the work that they do. You know, Richmond won't help Pinole, or Vallejo won't help Fairfield. And so that never made any sense to me. So in my point of view, if there's a problem in San Francisco, eventually it's going to trickle down to Fairfield. You know, so why not start the help early?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the basis of that, of having such a large territory.
Thank you. So before we get, because I have some very pointed questions I want us to have a dialogue about, but before we get there, I wanted people to have some kind of background on who you are and why you're joining the conversation on this next bit of topic. And I just want to take maybe about 10 minutes, because at the top of the hour I want to get into what you're working on in the Bay Area and nationally with men. But right now I wanted to talk about this subject, and I wanted you to weigh in on this because I think that this part is important. So, Brother Fleming, you can do it or I can do it, but I wanted to talk about what happened over the last week with former President Obama speaking on this issue of the Middle East conflict on the Israel-Hamas war. Do you want to tell him, sir, or you want me to tell him?
Go right and take the lead. I'll follow my key host.
Thank you. So, President Obama was on a podcast this past week. It was about 2 weeks ago. And in that podcast, he said something to the effect of all of us are complicit, and to solve a problem, you have to take in the whole truth,
right.
And that you can't just and that nobody had clean hands in this, and that he had to take some time. He was on Pod Save America, this podcast, right? And he said that this what's happening right now is sort of a moral reckoning for everyone, right? And that when you admit that nobody's hands are clean, that everybody, all of us, are complicit to some degree, and in order to solve it, it requires that you have this mission of that is, even though it's a complex situation, but you have to have an mission of complexity. And that what Hamas did was horrific. There's no justification for it. But what is also true is that the occupation and what's been happening to Palestinians over all this time is unbearable. And all that is taking place against this backdrop of like decades and decades and decades of failure to achieve this, like, this durable peace solution for both Israeli and Palestinians. And he said, when he looks back at even his time as president, he looks back and he thinks to himself, what could I have done in my presidency to move this forward? Did I try as hard as I could have? And even though I tried hard and I've got the scars to prove it, could I have done more? Could I have done something different? And he said he was honestly struggling with it. Now, he's gotten some pushback from people, of course, because all the people who are just staunch, Israel has a right to defend itself, you know, are saying he's taking this moral equivalency kind of stance. But before I tell you what I have to say, I wanted to know, so sister, that's the backdrop of what we're discussing. Say, I don't think you'll be upset about it.
And he says, no, I'm upset. I'm upset. I reserve my right to be upset. I agree with him. This is a time of moral reckoning. I think that this situation is more a trial on us who are not in Gaza, because I do believe that those who have been killed, that they're martyrs and that they have gained a paradise, inshallah. But I feel that those of us who have running water, who can go to the bathroom,
yes,
who can,
yes,
you know, put gas in your car, that is, you know, there should be a voice in you that says, wow, I'm blessed with this. There's someone in Gaza who is not blessed with this. What I would ask him is, why did you commit to this MOU for $3.8 billion to Israel every year?
And I think that's what he's saying the same thing. He's saying that he believes he was complicit in it himself.
Right. Yeah, one of the references that I made when I listened to President Obama, and I appreciated what he said, but a stronger statement came from former President Jimmy Carter. I don't know if you heard what he said about that whole situation and occupation, but he was the very first, I would say, recent president who wrote a book about the whole matter.
Yeah.
And I actually used the word occupation long time ago, and how the essence of the problem is that of occupation. And if you don't recognize the occupation problems and what it's evolved into, then you never have a full understanding of what's really happening in that part of the world. So I was encouraged that he used the word occupation, President Obama, in his presentation, and accept partial responsibility for not doing enough while he was even in office. That's much stronger than anyone else recently, other than, of course, a strong, strong statement from former President Jimmy Carter. And he spent some time over there, you know. And I have so many friends who've been there who just presented horror pictures of what they experienced. And they say, you can't really understand unless you're actually in those camps. He called the West Bank a camp, and he called Gaza prison and walls.
Yep.
So he said, unless you've been incarcerated, you don't have a sense of how these people are being cajoled, told when to get up, when to lay down, where you can't go, where you can go. It's almost living a walking prison in their own country. So that element of humanity being given to the Palestinians, I've finally seen a few, quote, media outlets to begin to put a human face to what they're going through. And what made me fall down on Sasha the other day when I saw those babies wrapped up who had passed away, infants, because of what they did to the hospital. I mean, about 10 to 12 of them lined up. I said, my God, Allah, why? You know how you go through that motion. So I literally had to fall down on my knees on that one and ask a lot of sort of guide me, because I have a little sword in my seat every now and then. I have to pull out and chop some heads off. Don't take that literally, but in a metaphorical speaking. But I was just so distraught by seeing that kind of level of inhumanity and barbarism. It just bothered my soul, you know. So, but, you know, I give accolades to Brother Obama for what he said. And, again, that idea of giving, and not just Israel. Israel gets $3.5 billion, but you know who gets the second amount? It's Egypt. And I'm thoroughly disappointed. Egypt is the second recipient of our greatest foreign aid allocations. And they have been cruel in the sense of holding that gate. Well, I won't go into all the details, but they didn't open up an opportunity for people to leave Gaza until they were forced to do so. And that's still another discussion we will have another time. But they've been complicit also in this matter, and they're right there on the border of the country, and they could do a whole lot more. Even though there's some poverty in Egypt, I've been there, but they can at least open up their borders for humanitarian purposes for those people that are suffering, untold suffering. I mean, can you imagine walking out of your house, walking for miles and miles and miles and still been attacked? And all you have is your feet. Okay, I'll pause right there because I'm going to get on my platform. I apologize, Cheryl. Take the lead again. Your brother just got a little upset.
I'm going to say this one thing. I had this epiphany. You know, Imam Muhammad gave us the Craig Committee back in the 70s, late 70s, early 80s. And he asked us to look at that image of the Christ on the cross and what are the consequences of that. And so, you know, we associate that with Christianity, but Judaism is in that image also. And that whole thing of the chosen people and why you can dehumanize people is in that image also. So I think that we need to reflect back on that image. And that can help us to see psychologically what is operating in the minds of these oppressive people.
Troy, do you have anything you can add?
Yeah, well, a few things. So, as I was sitting here listening, and the one thing that was said, one of the things that I picked up on was the idea of we have running water. This morning, I got up and I made my coffee. I made my water for the day. I cleaned off my desk in my office. Mm-hmm. Without worrying about, is my house going to be standing in the next few hours?
Mm-hmm.
And is my home going to get, am I going to lose a son because he was at the wrong place at the wrong time? If I get sick right now, I can go to the doctor. And it should give us perspective on how we actually live and take advantage of what we have. You know, and the other thing that came from that was these young men and women who are in these streets who are thinking that their lives are hard, try living in a war.
Exactly.
Try living in a war, and you may not want to get up to go to school this morning, but what do you do when you can't go to school because your school just got bombed and it no longer exists? We lack a sense of gratitude and appreciation for how we live on a day-to-day basis. And things like this will make you look at your life, it should make you look at your life different for the things that you actually do complain about on a day-to-day basis. These people can't go. We have children who died because they couldn't get service. They couldn't be treated at a hospital. That's perspective. Those are the things that you have to look at your own life and say, okay, now what can I do just to make my life have a little bit more meaning? And back off the fact that I'm yelling at the barista at Starbucks because they ran out of coconut or they ran out of their pumpkin spice recipe. You know, it just gives you a level of perspective that we need to have. And even with President Obama and President Carter, one thing they did do, and Cheryl, you know this from me, is they took ownership.
Accountability.
You can't do anything now from them. we can start to grow and get past this. We can start learning things and listening and look at solutions. They acknowledged and took responsibility and accountability for the problem that they helped cause. But by doing that, now we can move on to how do we fix this.
Right.
You know, and if we have any, you know, on the other side of our, should the United States even be involved? But that idea does come from, well, on one hand, yes, because we help perpetuate this issue. And then on the other hand, sometimes we need to just shut up and be quiet and just give help but not, you know, try to impose our will. So,
exactly.
Yeah, that's all I have.
Thank you. Okay, we have 11:01. I don't want to spend all program on it, but I'm just going to say this one thing. Thank you for those comments, all of you. And I will just, I'm going to end this with this. There was one of the things I wanted to say was because I got I read the article that, because it was Bill Maher who came back and said, you know, he was slamming President Obama and said that he was, you know, his moral equivalency, right? And when you were in office, you didn't do X, Y, Z. You had an opportunity to not, similar to what you just said, sister, about not send money overseas and all of these other things. And it's very easy to suggest this. And many of us didn't like him when he was doing it back then. But one of the things, and Troy just said this, that is not easy to do is to look back and say what I did, to admit your mistakes. Because we have people right now who know what they're doing is not right, who still are not able to admit it. So there is this last president that we had just before President Biden, number 45, he initially criticized Netanyahu after Hamas' attack, saying that, you know, Israel wasn't prepared. He even praised Hezbollah because he said that they're very smart. He retracted it after that, right? And that was a mistake. He should not have said that because it was not about, you know, somebody being smart attacking someone else. It's not what he was. But you can't, I don't think anybody claiming moral, a moral high ground now that they can look backwards and say, you know, maybe I was wrong. They're looking at what happened in the moment may have been what they should have done because we were coming off of, you know, the attack on the country after 9/11, which I'm still, a lot of Muslim, especially Muslim women, are still reeling from 21 years later, 22 years later. The country was different 22 years ago than it is today. So to say that, you know, you should have done something, I don't know about you. I'm not the same person as I was 22 years ago. So what we know now and what you know then, I'm just going to say, if I knew 22 years ago what I know today, woo-wee. If I had me 22 years ago telling me what I know now, forget these tens. Man, you couldn't stop me. You couldn't stop me. So I do think, you know, the same way we want grace, I think that we do deserve to give other people grace when they do show some kind of contrition and the ability to say, you know what, I was wrong. But what's happening right now is even more wrong. Is even more wrong, and we need to do something different. We need to do something different. This is wrong, and we need to stop it. And the fact that they've slaughtered over 11,000 people, chiefly among that is 40, almost 50% of small children. It just for me is not the time to look at 12 years ago. It's the time to look forward and say we got to do something different here. This is not working.
And we got to be orientated towards solutions that matter, you know, the focus has to be on solutions. And, you know, I was in a conversation yesterday with the group. I said, listen, the last report I read, there was 14,000 Palestinians killed so far. Some are saying 12,000, et cetera. There's no way to morally justify that number of people being slaughtered because of the numbers that you lost, tit for tat, bat for bat, et cetera. And who has the moral authority besides our experience as a people? Do we go out and hang all these Caucasians who hung our people? I mean, I can go into a whole litany of experiences we've experienced as a people. Now, we didn't come out doing that kind of thing. And it's only because of God's grace and mercy on our spirit that we didn't come out with, you know, all kind of attacks, Nat Turner, over and over and over again on people who had, you know, been cruel to our ancestors in many, many contexts, sometimes too horrific to describe. But we have been given a spirit of really a spirit of forgiveness beyond imagination, I'll put it that way, given what our people went through under the guise of chattel slavery, et cetera. And I'll just conclude with this. I have some friends from India, and we talk a lot about the Dravidian situation over there and how if you're a certain skin color, the way he grew up, he was considered worse than an outcast. He was considered untouchable in his own country. He said, Slim, this thing in my country existed 500 years, this caste system. So we have the most rigid system, even though it's illegal, culturally, some of the Indians still carry some of that. If you're a Brahmin, meaning you're light-skinned, that's from the scripture, the Veda scripture, you're godly-like. If you're dark-skinned, you're closer to the untouchables, and they have a delineation between light-skinned and brown-skinned and dark-skinned with a certain role, quote, that God has given you for life. And so we have examples we can look at internationally and say, my God, even though we've had some struggles in this country, we've been blessed tremendously. And we got a duty today to stand up and be the moral flag waver and express our concerns to humanity and give some guidance so that we can solve some of this stuff, to put it mildly. Okay, I'm done. Sister Cheryl, I took more than 15 seconds, so I apologize.
No problem. Okay, like my mother said, I ain't going to hurt you. Like my mother said, an eye for an eye make the whole world blind.
All right, sis.
And a 2 for 2 make a vowel over here. Chewing on some.
Yes, yes, exactly.
Rather.
Oh, man.
Well, I will offer something, some thoughts in terms of solution. I think that a lot of problems that we have with the foreign policy, and if we look specifically at Israel, that our politicians have is the money that comes into these campaigns. So I think we need to have campaign reform, where it doesn't cost so much for a person to run for office, number one, and where it comes from a central fund and not from all of these dark money sources. And with that, negating or put some more guardrails up in terms of the influence that these various lobbies have on politicians based on the money that they give to them, as opposed to, you know, having legitimate claims and issues. That's one thing. I think that the United States, that we have forfeited our right to really be engaged in a final peace process and negotiations because of the positions that we have taken that have just been so lopsided support with our eyes closed of Israel. Netanyahu is arrogant right now. I have to go find the quote. My husband said that he read this quote years ago where Menachem Begin said that he owned the United States. And that has been true from 48, you know, and the clips that they showed recently of Joe Biden talking about even if there wasn't a state of Israel, we would have to invent a state of Israel. That kind of lopsided thinking, I think, precludes the United States being involved in any peace settlement. I do think that the offer of the current president of South Africa in terms of South African representatives being involved in the peace settlement would be a good idea because of their experience in coming up from an apartheid system. I think they would have the empathy and the insight and the lived experience that can help in that. Now, whether Israel would accept that, I doubt very much, but I definitely don't think that the U.S. at the negotiating table would be a help. I think it would be a hindrance, as it has been historically. And I do think that we have to look back to a certain extent, but not to dwell in the past. It's not easy being a leader, you know, and no one has to convince me that being a leader of a nation as the United States is an easy job. When you aspire to it, then you have to be prepared for what comes. But at the root of the problem, this whole issue was, it was founded on an error. The Balfour Declaration, the British Mandate, all of that was error. That was European error, colonialism, imperialism, whatever you want to call it. All of that was error. Arrogance that for you to think you're going to draw on a map, okay, this is your land, that is your land. So it's good to look back and see the things that were wrong and to learn from those experiences. I agree with you on that point, Cheryl. So we do have to look back and recognize we can't use that same approach of outside forces determining the solution. The Palestinian people have to have a voice that's equal to Israel in the solution that is that is determined. And I'll put in this one final thought. A lot of the impetus for the genocide that the right-wing leaders of the Netanyahu government has been pushing for genocide because of strict numbers. The Palestinians, in numbers, their population was greater than Israel, and they've been able to whittle it down, where if they're very close, but the Palestinians keep having these babies. And so I do believe that some of those white right-wingers are looking at it. Let's kill as many as we can, because if we get to the point where there's a one-state solution, because that was on the table at one point, they would not be in the minority. So I think we have to look at the whole picture of what has been the historical picture there and what some of these crazy minds in that Israeli government, what their objectives are. And that's it for me.
Sorry, anything to add before we move on? Because I do want to move on to talk about why I brought you on the show.
This is set it off.
Okay, all I want to say is, what else are you supposed to do when they lock you up and they won't let you move anywhere? You're going to have some babies. What are you going to do?
Well, and that, just that part alone blew me away a little bit, because that's kind of, you can see that's not only what they're trying to do overseas and in other different countries, that becomes, it almost just seems that's a global agenda to make sure brown and black folks don't keep growing, because they're trying to protect their position as the majority, as the power, you know. And that's a different conversation, but that's a very good conversation I think we need to have, because that's important, just seeing how, if you start to pay attention to not just the main thing, because they'll do some other stuff on the side. Because, you know, it's that whole idea, oh, no, here, look, everybody look at the shiny ball over here in my left hand and don't pay attention to what my right hand is doing. You know, so that's a very good point, a very good point.
Yeah, but they do it in I'm going to use the global T-H-E-Y because what people don't understand is there's two ways, right? I want to slow down the number of children in that are being had, but I don't want to allow you not to have children. So I want you to have children so I can hold you down in this certain area, right? Because the more children you have, the less likely you're going to rise into a certain class, right?
Yes.
But however, if I keep you from not having children, right, that's a problem too, because I wanna control how many children you can have so that you don't outpace the majority class, the majority class. But then I'm afraid that if you do outpace the majority class with the number of children that you have, so that's the dichotomy they're having right now, is that I want you to have so many that you outpace the majority class, so that I don't want you to have the choice not to have it. So there's where the whole freedom of choice and reproductive rights comes in. That's why there's a huge dichotomy there. But the other thing is that, and this is where black and brown and low-income communities have to band together, and this is where we're gonna come back full circle to the action network, is that if you ever been to a low-income community, doesn't matter, black, white, Latino, Native American tribal community, you'll see one thing in particular. Now, if you ever go to, you know, a community in the hills, I live in the hills, I'm in Oakland Hills last week, anywhere where there's country club, golf course, any place like that, the one thing you see different that you don't see in a low income, you don't believe me, try it out for yourself. You don't see fences. You see low fences, but you don't see them big old gates. But you see them in low income communities. You see them fenced in. They're trying to keep you in. They want you to know where you belong. And this was happening even when you talk about Gaza. Gaza is fenced in. They keep everybody off in. You can't. They limit your movement, almost like a prison. They call it an open-air prison, right? I want you to take a look around you. And anybody who's listening, take a look around you, even in your own area. Take a look around you. Look in the lower-income neighborhoods and tell me what you see. Tell me if you don't see that people are being, that the borders are being defined. This is your area. This is where you can move around. If you do see anything in the more affluent area, you will see is defined by subdivisions, right? Or a guard who's telling you, you can't come in here, you don't live here. But once you get inside, the houses are expensive and they're large. And they're not cut off from each other. They might be cut off from the rest of the world. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So they're defining for you. So we have our own little Gazas all over the country. If you've ever been in South America, you see them in the favelas, right? In the favelas, in South America, in Central America, you see these all the time. They purposely make sure you know that you are defined over here based on your status. In the Middle East, in the caste system, is that Brother Fleming was talking about, you are defined by that. Not just how you look, but where your family falls in this perception of where your caste is almost like this is where you can't come out of that for your life. And that's what's happening here. So what do we do to get people to take action? Sure. How do we get people to understand that this is something that they can, they have a say in?
Well, so the easiest thing, and this is the easiest thing in this case is actually the hardest, is to convince people that a vote matters. And your voice does matter. Because one of the things that will happen in these communities is that they believe that they can't get out of their situation. And they have no control over it. And politicians don't care about them. And all of a sudden, negative things. And I always tell people, you're right. Politicians don't care about you. Why? Because you don't vote. It's that simple. If we go back to when President Obama first got elected, and all of a sudden the Republican Party seen how many minorities came out to vote and how they actually shifted an election, a presidential election. The next thing I know, I'm sitting here watching it, wait, where did this black Republican come from? Where is this Hispanic Republican come from? Where are these minority Republican groups coming from? They understood the power of that vote. But the problem is our people still don't understand the power of that vote. And so one of the things that I'm doing now out here in the Bay Area is that we're starting that. We're starting voter information. We're starting voting clinics. We're going to have voter events just to get people out to vote and understand that they do have power in their voices, to the simplest of things of making sure that their streetlights are all lit up. That's one thing we can always see. We go to a minority neighborhood and you compare that to, you know, a higher end neighborhood. A higher end neighborhood is daylight all the time. They make sure their street lights is on and make sure their roads is paved and so on and so forth. And just something as simple as that. We talked about this before with Vallejo, building Vallejo's infrastructure and not going off and getting all into numbers. Let's just make it simple. Let's make sure these roads are fixed. Let's make sure the street lights are on. All these things help deter one crime. They give a person a sense of pride. But the only way that that happens is if you put the right people in position. And we do have the power with that vote. You know, but that's the big thing. We have to make sure our people understand. You have to get involved. You got to go to your city council meetings. You have to go to your county supervisor meeting. Or at least come together and send a representative there. Because one thing about this is a side note. I'm sorry about this one. For Solano County supervisors, they think they slick because they have their meetings in the morning on Tuesdays and Wednesdays, I think, or something like that. The majority of people who want to make change, what they do in the morning?
They're
what you do every morning, Cheryl? They got to go to work. So they'll miss out on the things that, yes, they got to miss out on the things that are happening in their communities and in their county until it's too late.
Right.
So one of the things that I'm trying to do, and actually I'm not going to say it, one of the things that I'm doing is making sure we have representation at all these meetings. You know, once, and we all know, you send in a national organization to sit in on something, the conversation is going to change a little bit.
Exactly.
Some things may be, you know, some things may be tabled. Some, even when I was the political action chair with the NAACP, one of the things that I was trying to tell my branch is go to a meeting and see how, tell them who you represent. You'll see the conversation change in the room almost immediately. With the National Action Network, it's even bigger now because we actually do stuff. We're getting involved in legislation. It's not just the community stuff. We're getting involved in legislation. We're trying to make sure the laws that get passed, actually, we have a voice in that. You know, and that becomes it, but you have to, two things. You've got to get involved, vote and get involved. After that, anything can happen.
Mm-hmm. So, tell me this, though. Because we get a lot of people who want to,
you know, and you and I have discussed these. So we get these people who, for whatever reason, they get it in their head, they want to be, I call them title chasers, you know. They get the title.
We're
they
talking,
want the title.
We're getting ready to talk about planning. Yeah.
Well, they want the title, but they want the job, right? They don't want the job. They just want the title. They get the title, and then you either never see them again or you only see them, and they don't. And this is what usually happens with people who don't, with the public's distrust of government. And Brother Fleming, you can weigh in on this as well. This is why people just get frustrated with so-called politicians and politics, because they're like,
yes,
you know what, such and such, I voted for you, and then I haven't seen you since the election. Now here you are again, and now you want something else. You didn't do what you told me you was going to do last time, like what you said earlier about, you know, why there's no lights in certain areas, you know, and what you're going to do about it. It's stuff like that. So I just wanted you to talk about that. How do we get people to take ownership, take accountability, and then how do we as a public hold them accountable for it? Because it's more than just getting people elected. It's more than just getting people to step up. It's getting them to do what they say they're going to do, right?
Yes, yes. So the funniest thing with the politician that scares them the most, honestly, is that you tell them, I'm not going to vote for you next time. You got my vote this time, but next time I'm not voting for you. Because in their mind, they have all of a sudden not just lost their election, but they have lost money. They have lost support. They have someone now who is going to be a voice against them. And that's just one individual. And that's the problem. That's what they'll get caught up in or get into their heads. And that's the power of your vote. Your power of your vote is to actually have that influence over somebody. And the main thing we always have to remember that this stuff isn't a sprint. This is a marathon. You're not going to get it right the first time. Well, sometimes you may. You may knock it out the park with one official, and then, you know, you got everything that you needed to get done. But after that, if they don't get it right, okay, you messed up. You're gone. You don't get a do-over. You said you were going to do – we asked you to do three things, and you couldn't do not near one of them. So why should we vote you back? And part of that is just, you know, and then we have our own responsibility of paying attention to what they do and hold them accountable for what they do, not just put them in office, rely on their campaign promises. Because the most ridiculous thing is for a person to say that they don't trust politicians, vote for a politician, and then not keep track of them. Well, how much sense does that make? And not hold them accountable. So that's how we do
right.
That. This is a marathon, you know. This is not a sprint.
And I would add to that, keep a record. As a former county commissioner for about 5 years here in Forsyth County, North Carolina, I always encourage people, come to meetings, come in with a specific ask. Don't just go to the audience and observe. Have a specific ask, and then have a demand to have informational sessions that fits your schedule. And I give an example. In Forsyth County, for years, we met at 7 o'clock in the evening so people could attend the meetings. And then the majority party came in. Okay? So I was elected, and all of a sudden, I look around, I only have one other Democrat and a partial Democrat, but the rest of the board is Republicans. They voted to change the meeting to a 2 o'clock meeting. Of course, I voted against it. But I called up my little network and said, look, y'all got to show up at the meeting and raise your voices and challenge this shift, because you will only be able to keep up with this if you have access to Zoom, et cetera, or someone in your group has access to see what's going on. Okay, so a few people showed up, but it was not enough to sway the vote. So now they meet at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And as she said, Troy, at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, most of us are working. But you can demand an informational session in a public sort of a town hall meeting. They can't vote on issues, but they can at least let you know what's going on. And any group can make that kind of demand. I work with another group called Justice Collective, and it's 22 organizations, and we're a political engagement group as well and accountability group. And so when we show up, they know there's 22 organizations behind us, so we have a bigger voice. And the megaphone makes a difference. Megaphones and money. Megaphones and money, and I'll end with that.
Exactly. So let me give you an example. So a couple of things came out this week. I'm not sure if you guys heard about the FBI raiding the New York
mayor's office.
And so they seized his cell phone and laptops, and so something's happening with his, and it has to do, Mayor Eric Adams, something to do with alleged text messages between him, a Turkish government official, the former FDNY commissioner Daniel Negro late last summer, and there's some kind of ongoing investigation that has to do with one of his top fundraisers. So maybe not him directly, but something with fundraising, right? It's up to the public to try and find out why. I would not be sitting back. If that was me, I would not be sitting back waiting for some, I'm showing up at your meeting. Usually a coalition of us, a group of us sitting back like, what's going on? You know, you don't get to not make comment, because especially everything that he did, taking this real high moral stance all last year about, you know, knocking immigrants out of the city and all of this. No, brother. You owe us explanation. The other one is, not sure if you heard this one, the New Orleans mayor, LaToya Cantrell, she just got hit with another set of ethics charges. Black woman, and she's got hit before because she, this time she got hit because she spent like almost $30,000 of city money upgrading her flights to first class. This woman right here, I'm picking my words real. I got some other choice words, but I know we on the air.
It's the Cheryl Dictionary about to come out again.
Thank you very much. Cheryl Lee's about to come out.
Yeah.
She's going to say she did it because the economy is unsafe for black women. How dare you? Now, we know that New Orleans is not exactly teeming with money for the average person. So she finally gave back some money. She finally reimbursed $28,000, just about $29,000 back, 13 domestic flights, 2 international trips to Europe. She upgraded in October. She said it wasn't for luxury, because it's for health and safety, because COVID and the world of black women walk in requires her to do this. Woman, please.
Wow.
Don't you care.
Wow.
Now,
at least you didn't say Negro, please.
Black... I was close. No, there's all kinds of reasons why we can do a lot of things that you can blame on being black or brown or women. Don't you dare do that. Right? Then now they've moved me into different seats because of mobility disability, but I'm not using the people's money for that. We know that that is an ethics violation, that you can go to jail for that. You know this, Brother Fleming. We are taught that as elected and appointed officials, the one thing that is off limits is air travel. It's off limits. They tell you that they want is off limits. So she's lucky she hasn't gotten kicked out of office yet. It's not yet. She's still under. And the other thing is that she treats her guards like servants. She's living in a government apartment, rent-free, 3 miles away from her house, which is valued at about $500,000, which is a lot in New Orleans. And you living in a government apartment three miles away from your home. It's this kind of stuff that leaves people not wanting to trust government. So, Troy, this is what I'm talking about, right? I mean, not just there, it's in many places. How do we get people, and this is going into like this huge election year, right? So it makes it hard for those of us who are trying to do the right thing all day long. It makes it hard. Not that many black and brown women in office anyway.
Yeah. What do you want me to hit on first? Because I look at the idea of this woman updating to first class, right? And I'm like, okay. Yeah. But she went over here. So I'm assuming that she went from being a regular passenger. So what's that, coach? Being a regular coach passenger. But then she skipped over business class.
Mm-hmm.
Which gives you a little bit more space. And isn't there one more?
No, it's economy plus.
No.
Economy plus.
It's economy?
Business class.
And
so
then first class.
She went from economy all the way to first class. So economy plus
all the way to first
is
class.
Like right behind business class. All the way to first class.
And so with that, I would understand business class because, you know, you need space. You may have to work on the plane, and so on and so forth. You know, so that makes sense. But everything after that, she's just wrong.
Pay for it yourself.
She messed up.
She's just wrong.
Yeah.
Pay for it yourself.
She's just wrong.
Pay for it yourself. Yeah.
And these are the sort of things that we have a problem with when we look at our public officials, of mismanagement, of taking advantage of certain things. And yes, their job is hard. A public official's job is hard. But there's a certain point where you have to have a bit of a moral compass on what you will and won't do, right? You have to, okay, I'm going to get a bump up to business class because I have my staff. We got to work on this thing on our way here. But if I'm not going to take my – she said she had a couple of trips to Europe.
Yes, sir.
So she's pretty much just flying, going on vacation and charging her constituents.
Definitely.
And once again, things like this are why we have to be as constituents, hold our public officials accountable. And she's doing all this. And if it was me and I had to do a strategy or messaging against her, she's on our way out. Because now I'm got the team digging. What else has she done? If she's done this, she's done some other stuff. She ain't got caught for yet.
There you go.
That's kind of how you look. You hold them accountable, and being accountable for things, it does take time. But if we want change, we got to be in it from the beginning to the end,
right?
Not just when it's convenient.
Right. So those of you who are thinking about running, what I want, I brought that up because I want people to get involved. But I also want you to think, like, and Brother Fleming, you know these, and Troy is a strategist, you know these as well. I think that it's also not just what you can do and get away with. It's also the perception. I'll use myself. I was recently on a trip to Chicago. And, you know, I'm a Marriott elite member. I travel everywhere. I've got, half a million Marriott points. But there was 100,000 people coming to this conference, huge water education, WebTech, huge conference. And they called me to say that the room that I booked at the hotel with a roll-in shower, they made a mistake and that room was not available. So they were moving me, the one that was closest to the convention center. They were going to move me from that Marriott to the Ritz-Carlton, which is a Marriott property. Okay, no problem. Then a couple of days later, I had a problem because I needed to stay an extra day because I had a board meeting that Wednesday. So, Brother Fleming, you can probably see where I'm going with this.
Yes.
When you're on travel, you have to publish where you are staying with a public notice. You got to post it at the hotel. You have to post it in the packet
in a public packet where you are staying so that anybody in the public can actually attend the meeting. So I had to give it to the hotel ahead of time, tell them where I'm staying. They got me a small conference room, and it was going to be in the public package. There was no way on God's earth I was going to publish that Cheryl was going to be staying at the Ritz-Carlton, Chicago, for this public meeting. That was not going to happen. So, and it wasn't the fact that I was staying at the Ritz-Carlton. I stay there all the time. There wasn't it. It was the perception. Somebody would think that I'm spending, because if you looked up what the Ritz-Carlton was charging during that conference, it was like $1,600 a night. That's not what I was paying. But they didn't know that, right? They would know later when it's like this week when it comes out on our expense records that I was paying the same amount, you know, the published rate of $200-something dollars. But it's the perception. And so the last night, they got me back at the Marriott, Chicago, just for that one night. So I could have my meeting there, and I slept there that one night so that I could publish that I was at the Marriott, Chicago downtown.
That reminds me, you know, NACO, the National Association of County Officials, you know, we have our national conferences all over the country. And the last one,
it wasn't the last one.
We went in Las Vegas one year for the conference, right? But we didn't publish it as Las Vegas. We published it as Pine County NACO National Convention.
Mm-hmm.
But that same perception, you know, image is everything for some people, and perception is the only reality. So we did not want them to think that we're using tax dollars to go out there having fun in a Las Vegas trip. But I didn't mean to go ahead, sis. I apologize.
Yeah, it happened in when all of these congressional people in the middle of, you may remember this, in the middle of the shutdown back in 2009, went to a very expensive trip to Hawaii.
Yes.
And it was like, wait, public employees are not getting paid and you people are on a trip to Hawaii? And it had been planned for a year and a half in advance, but it was the perception. So sometimes that perception can lead to people's reality. And, you know, you got to be careful because God don't like ugly. So going back to how do we get people – I got people from South, so we got all kinds. So how do we get people, Trey, in, how do we get them involved? Right? How do we get them involved? Whether it's National Action Network, I want you to tell us about that. How do we get them involved? Because is the action that, especially our generation, we like action. And even if that action is like a pause at a time, right, we like action. What do we do? Tell us how people can get involved.
Well, first, you can always, you know, that's a tough one. Actually, no, it's not. That's a tough one without sounding self-serving. So I can say, hey, just go to nationalactionnetwork.net and then.
My mother said, toot your own horn. She who toots her own horn know that it has been tooted well. So toot, sir. Toot.
Get the tooting.
The
simplest way is right now, if you're in the Bay Area or actually even across the nation, you can always reach me directly at info@nanbayarea.org. You can call me or call the office at 707-401-0844. You can go to nationalactionnetwork.net, see what they're doing. And the other part of it is get involved. There are so many community organizations out right now that there's nothing you can't get. And if you have an interest in your community, you can get involved. But you have to want to get involved. Because one of the things that we're doing, that I'm going to be doing, is partnering up with these smaller organizations to make sure they have a voice. Because some of them are already doing good work. They just need just a little bit of a push. like there's an organization called the Pink Elephant Project, and they deal with homelessness. I brought the president of that one into Man to make sure that now we can start doing things across the Bay Area, because she was just focused in Oakland. But we're going to help. We're going to help her.
Black Pink Elephant. What does that mean?
That's not my organization. That's not.
Okay.
Don't ask me about that woman's stuff.
I don't know. It didn't make sense to me. Yeah, I don't know what it means.
You know what? And I did. A while back, I did ask her, and she told me, and I was like, all right, that's your stuff. I can't.
Okay. All right.
I'm not going to. I ain't going to tell nobody your thing. Got to put sugar or salt on their grits. As long as they're eating, I'm happy. So there's, you know, and there's other organizations that we can get involved in. There's, you know, we're going to be rolling out. Actually, can I just talk quick about one thing that is important? And I want everyone's input on this. Because one of the programs that we're going to be rolling out is getting black men involved in politics. We have tons of organizations that focus on minority women and helping them, you know, make sure that their voices are heard. But right now, one of the things that I've noticed is black men aren't even a part of conversation. They're not talking about – the only time that a black man gets on TV now is this, you know, they're talking politics, but it's only, what, four brothers out there who actually get the microphone and get a camera in front of them? Five. Nope, it's back down to four. Tim Scott just dropped out, so ain't nobody going to be talking about him.
Right, he didn't need the mic anyway. Keep going.
He didn't need the mic anyway.
And they took the brother
off
CNN. Professor.
They took the brother off CNN. We have two senators. We have Cory Booker.
And Cornel West.
Cornel West now. But one of the problems that we're having and is that if we're not even talking about black men, it leaves it open for another narrative to move past the strength of black men.
Absolutely.
And that becomes, because right now, the only thing we're pushing, well, I'm not going to say the only thing that we're pushing, but the idea is black women empowerment. And yes, that does need to be a conversation. But also, the problem is that in pushing black women empowerment, we don't talk about black men. So their roles in the community, their roles in the family, all get diminished. And that becomes, that's the narrative right now.
Right. It doesn't need to be at the exclusion of black men, right? And sometimes that's what it sounds like, is that the exclusion of black men. I said it's sometimes pushing black women's empowerment seems to be at the exclusion of black men.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
No. Yeah.
And see, there was a group called 100 Black Men working with what they called marginalized schools as tutors for a long time. They go in first part of the year, they'd be there to welcome the kids in, and they set up tutorial services for kids who need to be tutoring. It was very effective at one point. You don't hear a lot about that organization these days, but I know I worked with them over the years, and that kind of stuff needs to be regenerated because it makes a big difference. The images those kids.
Yeah. They're still around. They're still around, but they're not very political, though.
They aren't.
No. They're not very political.
Okay. Yeah, the one in the Triad is pretty strong over in Guilford County. The one over here in Forsyth County is not as strong because the leadership, unfortunately, made transition. They were not structured to pick up the leadership, which is another problem. That's a whole other discussion. But there's definitely a need. There's a need because, you know, there's an implication sometimes of implied division within the community, you know, along the male-female line, and that's insane for us to bite into that. We need each other now more than ever before, actually. I'll pause there because I've taken up my 15 seconds again.
You
no,
sound
it ain't
like Cheryl Boy, you like that.
I just think we got too many messages that are going through that are not friendly to, how I'm going to say this, sister, my flow without getting in trouble on the air.
Go ahead. Get in some good trouble.
Yeah, I'm getting some good trouble. I'm getting some good trouble. Troy, don't call me after this and get me in trouble. But these messages that are being said are not good to black men, because not only are the messages exclusionary, that are empowering black women, exclusionary to black men, they are emasculating to black men, even from black men to black men. Right? We have too many. We have too many, and don't be at me on my social media. Don't be calling me, saying nothing to me, because I said what I said, and I'm gonna say it now. There's too many black men who are competing with black women there.
Yes. Yes.
I said what I said.
No, but that's but you're right. It's the idea that we're running into right now that we're getting told that a strong black woman is what's needed in this world. And that's it. A black woman, you don't need no man no more. You don't need to do this. You can be your own boss. You can be your own head of your seat. You can be your own head of your company. And that's true. There's nothing wrong with that. But we're losing the focus. We're losing the vision of what's important, and that's a strong black family.
Right. Or strong men, period, or toxic. That's the other message that we're
toxic,
saying.
Yes, is
right?
The other message. If he's strong, well, he must be wrong. It's like, hold on, wait, you
exactly.
want a strong man. You want this, you want that. Yeah, but
he
can't tell me nothing. So what does that mean? If you don't want nobody to tell you anything. Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
exactly.
And it comes down to, I start saying things, I make my own money. I don't need no man. Okay. Then your life is about money. And this one may get me in trouble, because I look at every woman who says that, then you have a price tag.
Yep.
If your concern is about money, then you can be bought and sold. And I'm not going to say that you calling yourself a hooker, but it kind of sounds like one to me, because if you're not, then it kind
of
sounds like slavery. You know, once you start putting price tags on things, yeah, it's going to be a whole thing. It'll be me. I'll be all right.
I told you, sister, we're going to get in trouble with that. I told you we're going to get in trouble with that. I told you we're going to get in trouble with that. Call a spade a spade.
That's the way we have to look at it. Take a commercial break.
Look,
we
have
break.
Public service announcement. I got to make a comment after public service announcement.
Well, here's the announcement. Well, heavens to Betsy.
I mean, so, you know, we want to look at. We have to look at things that way, though.
Yeah.
We got you. Okay, Brother Fleming, and then Sister Makala. Go ahead, Brother Fleming. We got about 5 minutes. Go ahead.
Oh, I don't realize the time was so short. I'll try to make this 5 seconds in that case. You know, the idea that we put out of the image of a strong family is paramount. Now, that family structure has changed over the years, but we got to emphasize the importance of strong male leadership, period. And black men, you got to step up to the plate. Some of us are dropping the ball, and I'm going to be straight up with you. I have 5 grown kids. By the grace of Allah, only one of them is my opportunity child. But the other ones are doing pretty well, you know. And my opportunity child, and I, we have our conversations man to man, heart to heart. And you know, he's a good soul, but, you know, he hasn't, let me say it this way, he hasn't quite found himself yet. So I'm trying to, you know, put a light on his life a little bit now. But beyond that, these images, we got to be very careful, because if you look on TV, what images do you see of black males? And even in the commercials even, now they talk about the storylines of different programs they're putting out there. Mm-hmm. That's the image of a black male. It's to be researched carefully and also present another context, too, because you don't see the positive images, unfortunately. You see a whole lot of negativity.
We got a whole show on this.
Yes,
it's a whole
that's
show.
Exactly right,
this
show.
Is a whole
I took more than 2 minutes. I'm sorry. I'm stepping back now.
No, this is a whole show. No, no, you ain't got to apologize because this is a whole show. Go ahead, sister.
Yeah.
I want to know what an opportunity job is, too. Go ahead, sister.
can you tell us what that is first before?
I'm
stuck on that one. What's an opportunity job?
That was good. I like that one myself.
Let me make it very plain to you. That's when you make sash at least 5 times a day for.
Okay, all right.
Okay.
So it's an opportunity for you to get all the blessings you can get, huh? Okay.
Yeah,
you need them
to deal with that situation, you know.
Yeah.
That's that one with that more than three, sister.
Yeah, I see. We talked about a lot the last couple of minutes. I would just say as far as the officials that, you know, take advantage of the situation. Again, power, greed, arrogance, all of that comes into play. But perhaps organizations like National Action Network and also ACGG and like-minded people, when we're dealing with education and cultivating to try and motivate people to be engaged, to really emphasize the concept of servant leader so that you get people who are committed to serving as a leader as opposed to trying to get everything they can get out of the position in terms of power and influence and money and status and all of that. I think that's a very key thing we have to strive to really incorporate in whatever curriculum or syllabus that we use in developing leadership and the importance of having a strong moral compass. That's it for me.
Thank you for that. I appreciate all of that. It's been a really, really good conversation. I appreciate all of you. Troy, you want to give us that contact information one more time, real quick. We got about 2 minutes. I want to make sure people know what's the website.
The website is nationalactionnetwork.net. Our site for nanbayarea.org is almost finished, but you can contact me at info@nanbayarea.org, or you can call in at 707-401-0844. So you'll get a taste of everything that we're going to be doing from voting, dealing with unions, education. We have programs. We're going to be focused a lot in dealing with policy, so our political voice gets heard. There's going to be a program that we're going to be rolling out, social accountability. And that's one of the things that gets dealing with that marathon with politicians and understanding that, you know, you better start paying attention to our votes. And then the men's focus group dealing with churches and synagogues. So there's a lot. There's going to be a lot that I'm doing. So it's going to be fun, though.
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. And we'll have you back in a few months to come and fill us in some more. With that, thank you, everyone, for joining in today. Appreciate you, Troy. And I join us again next Monday, 10 to noon Pacific time, 1, 2, 3 Eastern, with the Mat 5. This is Cheryl Suttis with the wonderful sister Matila Elijah Gabri and brother Fleming Elamin, signing off with Mat 5. Remember, stay engaged, stay politically aware, active, change the way you look at things, and the things you look at will change. Have a wonderful week, wonderful day. Assalamu alaikum. Thank you so much. Peace. Be out of here.